In the world of business, one of the consistent questions we hear is how do you get your marketing teams and your sales teams aligned and pulling in the same direction? Because most often, that's not exactly the case. Marketing teams have ideas that even they could do a better job converting the demand that they're creating and outperform the sales organization. Meanwhile, you have people on the sales team who believe they have the next best idea for the great marketing campaign and honestly believe they have more insight into what's going on in the market and with customers and with competition than the marketing team can understand. So for you as a revenue executive, it's all about how do you harness the creative power and potential of both sales and marketing and get them aligned and rowing in the same direction. Because ultimately it takes the power of both of those teams to achieve what you're after and what your company wants, which is top line sales growth and performance. Today, we're gonna hear from Michelle Barbeau, who's the Chief Revenue Officer at eHealth. Michelle is a classically trained marketer, having spent nearly a decade at General Mills, time at United Healthcare, and then coming to eHealth originally as a CMO before taking over sales responsibility several years ago. With the Modern Revenue Executive podcast, we're going to be looking to executives like Michelle, who come from the world of digital advertising, marketing, commerce, and sales to help you all understand how to drive the top sales performance in your company. And so today we'll explore that topic of sales and marketing alignment, and you'll get to hear a little bit more from Michelle and her perspectives on what's worked at eHealth.
This episode is brought to you by Invoca. When marketing meets AI meets human conversations, revenue happens. Invoca's platform gives marketing, sales, and customer experience teams complete visibility into the buyer journey, from click to conversion, creating better experiences that drive real revenue results. Discover how modern brands are scaling revenue at Invoca.com.
Michelle, thanks for joining us today. I've been really looking forward to the conversation. Great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Well, to start off, I know there are a number of topics that I'm really excited about talking with you today. But before we go deep, I thought maybe for the benefit of the audience, you could share a little bit more about what you all do at eHealth, the types of consumers that you serve. And then as we dive specifically into some of these topics, people have a better understanding of your business.
Awesome. Happy to. So eHealth, we're just over $500 million in revenue. We're a public company, one of the largest online and telephonic health insurance marketplaces in the U.S. So you can go to eHealth.com and compare plans across the nation's largest insurance companies, right? Think Humana, United, almost sometimes I do a shortcut. Think like Kayak for health insurance, right? So put in your drugs, your doctors, your pharmacy, and we'll help you compare and get into the details, right, of the plan coverage, deductibles, help you make those comparisons. Also, it is not an airline ticket, right? This is a pretty high stakes, high involved decision. So we do have about 1,500 licensed sales advisors. So you can call, you can chat. We have real licensed advisors that you can connect with, and we will help you make those comparisons and the decisions that you're looking for. It is mostly direct to consumer. So we help a lot of Medicare seniors, but also individual, family, and small business. Also, maybe helpful for context, when I joined this role, I took on this about 3 years ago, the company had lost over $100 million in EBITDA in recent years. And so my charge was really about helping to drive that turnaround in our performance. What I saw was, we're a very tech-focused company. We, at the time, were headquartered in Santa Clara, California, right? So very much sort of Silicon Valley. We've been around for 25 years. Great e-commerce experience, great tech. We had never created a brand, right? Again, being a very consumer-forward company. And also, a lot of our functions in the organization operated in silos. And so getting into it, right, the opportunity was really about recentering around people, trust, clarity, and ultimately, I mean, we are a sales and marketing driven organization. We are in the people business, helping people through the complexity, a very emotional problem. Again, I mean, right, probably that most important decision that someone might make in the year that's going to affect their health and their finances.
Yeah, I remember, I've known eHealth as an organization for quite some time. And I remember when you first joined several years ago and the emphasis around brand, and it was a very different conversation than what I had heard from my colleagues and friends at eHealth in the past. So we'll get into that in a second. One of the things I found fascinating about you and your role today, and maybe we'll start from today and work our way backwards, is you're the CRO at eHealth. And, you know, one of the consistent problems I see in almost every business, regardless of what industry they're in, is that how do you get the right level of alignment between your marketing organization and your sales organization? And it's rare that I get the chance to talk to someone who has the opportunity to work directly with those two organizations. A lot of times there's push and pull between the two. So I'd just love to maybe hear some of your perspective about how do you go about doing that eHealth? How do you compare and contrast that with some of the experiences that you had as a marketing executive prior to joining eHealth, and things that people should think about in terms of how do they make their revenue machine be as effective as possible and getting that alignment from the very top of the funnel and the brand all the way down to the bottom of the funnel and how sales drives value both for the customer and for the organization?
Yeah, fantastic questions. And I'll key in on a piece that you said, which is the opportunity to bring those together and align. So as you said, I joined eHealth as our chief marketing officer, and then about a year and a half ago, shifted into chief revenue officer, taking on sales and marketing, and really to unify them, right? In order to serve better performance, efficiency. Taking that on, I like to try to simplify things, but I think about it as people, process, and priorities, right? In terms of how do you drive that alignment? And so really being crystal clear with everyone on our vision, our priorities, where are we heading? That drives a lot of unification. When you get into people, right? Things like taking a look at the organization structure, the operating model. For example, we had data teams in each of those different departments.
Yeah.
Bringing them together, I mean, any CRO knows data is the backbone of everything that you do, right? Understanding what's happening in the business, the insights, and driving how to optimize that. And so really merging those analytic teams so that we can be looking at the same data.
The same set of
problems. Exactly, right? I mean, that goes a long way. You know, similarly, putting in place kind of the cadences, right? Regular team meetings, joint budget and forecasting and planning. And then I'll say a big one is you get that shared KPI, particularly around conversion, right? That's magic. So before that, there can be a lot of finger pointing because it's not discrete ownership, right? It can be, boy, marketing is sending through crap leads and I can't convert them. Oh, sales isn't working hard enough, right? And that's where, like you talked about, that friction can come in. But again, the opportunity, the magic is when it's shared ownership and we own that KPI together as a shared goal. Honestly, it unlocks significant opportunity. So sales had a daily stand-up, right? We've got a dashboard. We look at it, adding marketing into that conversation. So 10 people, right, every day kind of looking at the same dashboard and the KPIs that each other, right, sales occupancy or performance by agent tenure, marketing channel level performance, all of a sudden, right, the opportunity, the understanding, and then what are the micro optimizations that we can make day to day, but it also allows everyone an open space to ask questions. Right. Hey, sales, have you ever thought of doing it this way? Marketing, how about this way? Right. It really opens that door. And then on top of it, once they have that understanding, I mean, it's amazing. It just becomes this snowball effect because they start to understand how they can leverage each other more. So for training our advisors, we do a regular podcast that goes out to all of the advisors, different topics. Well, they invited some of the marketing team members to be on that podcast and really explain what goes into driving, getting your phone to ring, right? The quality, the thought, the level of compliance and rigor. And I mean, honestly, even that alone drove an increase in performance similarly. Marketing, understanding sales is the front line. I mean, both sides are so close to wanting to understand that consumer, and how do you tap into the insights and understand where are there still sticking points, right? And listening in even on phone calls, leveraging it in many ways as a focus group and fodder to continue to kind of hone your messaging and the overall experience. Honestly, it's been transformational and driven tremendous growth for us.
Yeah, I love a number of the things you said. One of the sales and go-to-market leaders I respect the most that I'd worked with in my Salesforce days, she had this saying that she often used called, you go slow to go fast. And a lot of that was around alignment of goals and what you're trying to achieve and people and getting people feeling sort of shared accountability over similar things. And she would always emphasize that the more you invest the time in doing that up front, the faster that everything else goes when once you get going down the line. And there are all these small things like you mentioned around cadences and data. I mean, the number one problem I see is people arguing over two different versions of the truth. And one thing I've found in my own experience to be really useful is I'll do a one-on-one with our head of sales. I'll do a one-on-one with our CMO, but I also have a two-on-one and I point both people to that, because if we get into a discussion of sales complaining about marketing or marketing complaining about sales, I'm like, we're going to have this conversation together. We're going to have it based on data. I'm not going to have a world where we're sort of talking about one another behind another's back. So yeah, I couldn't agree more on a lot of that, a lot of that infrastructure. One of the things that I think is probably interesting for you all in your business is there's a pretty strong element of seasonality in what you do, so that you have a very strong crunch time in the fall to the early winter. Can you talk about how you use your downtime versus your crunch time as a go-to-market organization and how you think about the yin and yang? Because certainly I'm sure there's a huge amount of concern over tinkering with the engine when you're in late October, early November, and it's crunch time. But then how do you think about how do you use that seasonality in your business to your benefit?
I love that question. So October, for those, again, Medicare, right? I said that is a lot of our focus. And so the annual enrollment period runs October 15th to December 7th. So that 9-week period is something like 80% of our business. And so you are absolutely correct. That dictates, I mean, our go-to-market approach. In many ways, you spend the majority of your year planning for that ramp. Doesn't mean though, you still have, again, we're a public company, quarterly results. We are still helping people every single day. But just the volume of people that are needing help in that period, right, is just vastly different. And the kinds of additional marketing channels that we turn on, the level of spend that increases from a sales standpoint, we are ramping. We add additional staff. We have tenured agents, full-time agents, but there are definitely supplemental that will come in, for example. And we also add even screeners during that time because the call volume is so high. How do we help answer the calls? How do we help really utilize the time, which I know we're going to get in tech about AI. That's a really great opportunity that we've seen, but to really leverage the time that the licensed advisor has to spend it deeply with the consumer and really unpack their need state and find the right solution. So it really does drive everything we do. It's even, you know, core to how we talk to our investors quarterly and helping them understand the unit economics. Because again, when I talk about that ramp full year, you know, while you may not have sort of the full audience to tap into, it is necessary to bring people in, to get them licensed, to do the training so that they are ready for Q4. I will also share things like in marketing. I mean, we are a highly regulated industry. And so, and we can talk about this too, our brand is all built on authenticity. It is real people, our real advisors. It is all unscripted. But we do need to take every element of copy. It has to go through approval to every single one of our carrier partners, compliance teams. We work with about 50 different organizations and to the government CMS. CMS gets 45 days for each round of TV review. So it drives everything, right? So we are doing that production very, very early on in the year. It's almost like you understand what worked in December. And even before then, quite frankly, you're working on the brief. You are working on where are we continuing to head next, because you need to work so far in advance.
Yeah, it's always interesting to me talking to organizations that have these types of seasonality in the business, because this is all these strategic considerations of how to use that downtime to really maximize performance. And then as a former product person, always thinking about what adjustments do you want to make during that critical time and what's the risk versus reward. And it's definitely an extra layer of complexity from a decision-making point of view. You mentioned AI.
Well, I will say, we'll go there. I will say I would be remiss if I didn't also mention, I have also just taken on our longer term enterprise growth strategy. And so as you can imagine, another piece of that is how do you not become so seasonal? How do you leverage the time, the capabilities that we have to be able to do more? We have grown sales in ancillary products as an example during some of that downtime, but for us, again, diversification is a real opportunity and something I'm very excited for us to continue to develop further.
I have to imagine you would be delighted to get a few more hours of sleep between October and December. You can build that ability in the business for the rest of the year.
That's exactly right. Yes.
As you think about diversification and we trend towards AI, because we can't have a go-to-market conversation in today's world without talking about AI. But I want to do one quick preface there. You know, obviously in your core Medicare business, you have a certain demographic that you're typically serving, but I would imagine in some of your other businesses around SMBs and others, it's a much broader set of demographic audiences you're targeting. They get their information in different places. They engage in different ways. Is that a fair assumption?
100%. I will also say one of the areas you talk about SMB, small business, even larger employer. So we are getting more and more into the ICHRA space, which just the shorthand of that is it allows employers to set a defined contribution that will go towards their healthcare benefits. So you think about, I mean, they're facing 9% as the annual average increase in premiums. At some point that becomes unsustainable for employers. So they can set that benefit and then people can go to the individual marketplace and, you know, instead of having just the three options that your employer has narrowed to, I can look at what are all of the options and the right coverage for me, but it's, you know, pre-tax dollars. Think of it, it's basically going to be the transition that happened from pension to 401k. And so to your point, we are in the process of building out even our B2B capability, because I've talked about, right, we really have been a D2C organization and building those brand building capabilities. And now really starting to build out B2B, how do you work with employers, the brokers, that service? So yeah, expanding the audience and that go-to-market model.
Yeah, so in a technology-enabled world, you've got multiple different businesses serving multiple different audiences. And then the way that I think about the strategic sort of capability set at eHealth is, number one, you all are a business that have trained and developed professionals to help give consumers really excellent advice. One of the most pressing decisions they're going to make in their lifetime around the intersection of their finances and their healthcare. Number two, for years, you all have been working on digitizing that experience, giving people more ability to do more online. Now, recently, you've added the ability to do voice AI-powered interactions. Yeah. And so I'm just curious from an overall perspective, what's the eHealth philosophy in how you approach the consumer or the business in a variety of different ways? And how do you think about those different sort of strategic capabilities that eHealth has? How do you think about those working together and what are you trying to achieve?
Our mission is to best serve consumers when, where, how they need the support and help. And so that is at the top of the house and drives our decision-making. I will talk about even last year, we launched a capability we call Live Advise is the branded, but think of that as, you know, your phone. It's a video conversation with our advisor. It's a one way. So as the consumer, I don't need to worry about what I look like, but I can see the advisor show up. We Yep. share the screen and we compare the plans. And you can just see the aha, right? That, oh my gosh, I'm talking to a real person. This is not a bot. This is a real live. I see the interaction and all of a sudden I can see all the same detail that they're looking at to help. And they're teaching me in many ways how to shop and make this comparison. So again, for us, I can get into what we're doing, what we have just launched with AI agents as well. Very, very exciting innovation. But it is always about putting the people and the experience first and making sure that really shines through. So the AI agent that we launched earlier this year, it supports, like I said, both kind of our licensed advisors and the customer, right? It's on the front end. It's gathered from, right, thousands of data points, analyzing customer conversations, what's helpful in making a decision. So they are on the front end of screening calls, answering calls. We have completely replaced our off hours with this capability. But what is most amazing to me is how human it is. We state, we let them know, but even in surveys afterwards, sometimes they won't remember and think it was a human interaction. The AI can actually change, I've heard, where they change the pace of the conversation to match where the consumer is at. Or there was another example, a consumer referenced someone in their family that had recently passed away. And instead of just plowing through to continue to gather all the information needed, they paused, answered with empathy. Our advisors love it, right? Because they understand how it's helping on the front end to gather that information and then transfer the call, and so that they can really continue to go deeper with the consumer. So yes, it drives efficiency, but really for us, it's about extending our capacity, right? It's not about kind of replacing, but enhancing the experience both internally and obviously for our consumers.
It's a slightly different category, but everything you're describing reminds me of one of my own experiences, which is in everybody's favorite topic, tax preparation. And so I used TurboTax for ages and ages and ages. And the beauty of it digitally was it was just far more efficient to gather the information from your W-2 and your bank accounts and all those sort of things. But then what I found interesting over the past 4 or 5 years is they've started to offer this additional, what you mentioned around video chat reminded me of it, is this capability where you can have a tax professional come in at the very end to walk through your review with you, to answer any questions. And it's this beautiful combination of technology between digital AI and doing things like you take a screenshot of a brokerage thing and it automatically extracts all the amounts. But then you get the human touch at the end, which is all around, hey, I've had some new tax situation come up this year. I think I've answered this in the right way, but I'm not quite sure. I feel like there's this element in a lot of these categories, like you all are in the health insurance space, around can you give the buyer confidence?
Yes.
And part of confidence is rational and logical. Like I'm an ex-BCG management consultant with an MBA who loves Excel spreadsheets. But there's another part of me that it's a very emotional, qualitative part of that, that, you know, a website or a digital interaction may not be as effective as me having the confidence of like, am I speaking to an expert? And I feel like a lot of companies approach these things as yin and yang. It's one or the other, where if you really pay attention to the journey, and I think in some of the mentions you have, there's actually discrete places where different capabilities can play a different role. And the beauty is in how you blend all those things together and then make it be seamless and make it not seem like when I speak to my voice AI agent, I get some information. And then when I speak to a licensed human agent, I'm starting all over again. Like those are the things where the combinations really break. How am I feel like?
I couldn't agree more. So I was just at a conference over the weekend. AI, of course, was all over as the topic. I mean, AI is going to be the same as saying, you know, WWW someday, that sort of transformative for our culture and our economy. But someone described it as synthetic authenticity. And I loved that, right? Because it is about how do you enable it, but to be the most effective to help, it's got to be human. Right, to be effective. And you have to use it to help build trust, which, like you said, it leads to peace of mind, to confidence. You know, we also often think about retail, I think, does it best in terms of customer experience. And it's part of why I shifted. I used to be at General Mills, but moved into healthcare about 10 years ago. It's just really kind of more purpose-driven. And so much opportunity to really become consumer first. And so you look at what they've done in things like retail, where it is so easy Yes, though now we've got this harder box to play in, right? All of these compliance rules, regulation, HIPAA, PHI. And so, yes, it makes it harder, but that is still where the expectation and the bar is set. So how do we raise to that? To your example, this came out on the retention side of our business last year. We launched the application tracker, right? Cued off of the pizza tracker so that, again, this is in a much more high stakes way, but you only have that 9-week period that we talked about. And so all of a sudden, great, I found my plan, I applied. Now what? Did I actually get enrolled? Will I actually be covered in January? Meanwhile, you've got all kinds of outreach still happening. Don't miss out on the window, right? So we find people might apply multiple times because you're just, so how do you give exactly what you said, that reassurance and the confidence in your decision?
Yeah. And one of the trends you'd mentioned, I've heard not only within healthcare, but also across a variety of industries, which is an increasing scope on retention as well as acquisition. And I think, frankly, now I'm going to play to your historic roots as a marketer. I think a lot more purposeful focus on getting marketing organizations, not just focused on acquisition, but also thinking about retention as well. Can you just share anything that you've seen in your perspective around that evolution? Because I know, especially in a lot of these industries where that first purchase is so complex, is so important, people just tended to be focused on the net new customer, the net new customer, the net new customer, sort of forget that many of these businesses are annuity streams where the real value is, can you maintain that customer relationship over time? Any advice or perspective for other marketers or sales leaders and thinking about how you shift your organization from just that net new focus to the more long-term sort of annuity type of thinking and how you build and maintain those customer relationships?
Yeah, I love it. So a few things come to mind. We actually put, about a year and a half, 2 years ago now, we established a general manager model and declared sort of some of these business units that I'm talking about that have a lead, and then working with the cross-functional organization to really ensure that we're meeting our business goals, how we define the roadmap, right? Orchestrate everything that we're doing against it. Retention got its own business unit lead, right? And so that was a big part of putting concerted effort and focus. Data, again, being a big part, because you want to talk about the complexity of reading, by cohort, by their tenure, and what are the drivers. And so really getting us unified and organized around a team that is focused on it. We're talking about the same definitions, looking at the same data. Also for us, I mean, like you said, it is easy because it is an economic driver. Our acquisition cost, our LTV is about, between 2 to 3 years. So the retention side is critically important. We can't just bring them in on an acquisition and not continue. But again, it also just comes back to the human side. Let the consumer lead, give them what they need, and that guides us, right? So we can help them with other services, getting your PCP scheduled, your annual wellness visit. These things also tend to provide a lift in retention services. And then doing proactive outreach before the next AEP, because we have a window into what changes are coming. Carriers are required to send out the ANOC, your annual notice of change, but people may not pay attention to that. It's a pretty sterile letter. What does this all mean? Again, if we can give you proactive outreach, we actually give them a recommendation, right? We'll even send that out over email, and then we're here to help you through this change. So it benefits the business, but again, when it benefits the consumer and really thinking about, but it takes a concerted, organized, and focused effort to be able to put that in place.
Yeah, and you've given me a great segue. I know, and from some prior conversations that I've heard from you, you have a very strong passion around the intersection of what's good for the consumer and what's good for the business. So I want to give you a chance just to share your philosophy on that with everybody. But then I want to challenge you and just ask a little bit, believe that I think that way as well, but I do run into some situations sometimes where maybe there is conflict between those two ideas. And I'd love to hear your perspective on if people embrace this idea that what's good for the customer is also good for the business, if they do run into conflicts, like how do you think about managing those and the trade-offs between those two things?
Yeah, it's a good question. I would say, so my philosophy is very much to start with the consumer, to listen to where their needs are. Maybe I will tell just a little bit about when I started and joined this company. And like I said, it was in turnaround. And I joined as chief marketing officer and tech driven, but we didn't have a brand. How are you going to unify? We just were focused on, in many ways, there's actually two different teams focused on siloed channels, direct mail over here, not talking to digital over here. Again, my training, you know, all of my experience, I have been raised first as a marketer. The first thing you do is go talk to consumers and understand where their needs are. And it became very clear. And of course, you look at the competitive set, what's out there, you understand the industry. But they told us, right, how complex and hard this was to navigate. And frankly, all of the advertising was not helpful. It only added to it. Think talking head, spokespeople kind of yelling at you, flashing lights. Like I said, your time is running out. Don't miss out on this. But it wasn't really helping solve the need. And I will never forget, we sort of had a paragraph in there, right? Traditional marketer, like, okay, this is kind of what eHealth is. And I want to learn, what do they like? What don't they like? How are we going to build off of this? And they said, this doesn't really exist. I mean, of course, no one had ever heard of eHealth, but just even this concept, this can't be real. Literally, the words they said is, this is like the light at the end of the tunnel. And that became sort of our guiding principle of being authentic and 100% transparent in a way that the rest of the industry wasn't doing. But you listen for where, again, they said, this couldn't possibly be real. Particularly, how could this possibly be a free service? I don't believe that. Well, so then we worked in just a simple line of copy. It's free because we're paid by the insurance companies to help you, right? And we're unbiased because the sales team is paid the same no matter what plan you find. We really are here to serve you. But that's what I mean by becoming really consumer oriented and using that to help guide where you're going and the pain points to unlock, and that will drive growth. Your second question is around, okay, well, what if there's ever a conflict in that? Yes, I still think it does come back to what does the consumer need? And maybe I've been fortunate enough to work in consumer-driven organizations, and that it is important that that becomes a thread, that it's not just the marketing team's job. Everyone needs to believe it. And like I said, that's sitting in our mission. Right? That the consumer, how do we serve what the consumer needs? And so that does become one of those guiding principles when you're making decisions.
Yeah. And I'd say two things. First of all, I just want to know, because you're not bragging on yourself, I'm going to brag for you. Michelle just doesn't have a philosophy. Michelle drives results. I mean, you all received industry recognition for some of the work that you did from Ad Age and getting a Modern Healthcare Marketing Impact Award. You've drawn meaningful increases in revenue growth. So I know sometimes people, you know, appreciate the philosophies and they're like, yeah. But like, what's the bottom line impact? You've done both. So congratulations on that front. One of the things I've seen when people feel tension between those two concepts is their timelines are wrong. They're thinking about the customer and what's good for the business in a narrow time frame. And they're not thinking long enough. And obviously, like, we work in a very different business than you all do, and that we're primarily, you know, business to business. But I tell our teams all the time, I'm like, the world is small, and the way that you treat customers today will be remembered tomorrow and again in the future. In fact, we were working with a net new customer, talked to them about our, you know, how we could support them in their business a few months ago. And the VP of digital marketing remembered meeting the founder of our company and working with him 12 years ago. And so I find a lot of times part of the mismatch between what's right for the customer and what's good for the company is people's sense of time. They're thinking about the next 6 to 9 months. They're not thinking about the next 5 to 10 years. And I think as you get to be more senior in an organization, you have that longer view, that longer timeline over which you can evaluate decisions. You can say, yeah, if I optimize for the company, I do this. But if I really want to do right by the consumer, and I think about the consumer relationship, not from a 1 or 2 year perspective, but from a 10, 15, or 20 year perspective, like that can change a lot of your dynamics. Maybe to wrap, because I would love to let some marketers out there understand your journey a little bit more. I mean, I look at your profile. I've never worked at a consumer packaged good company, but I tend to think of companies like P&G and General Mills as being, you know, the elite of the elite training grounds for world-class marketing executives, sort of in two directions. I feel like CPG companies tend to really get you deep into brand in a way that I think your philosophy shows, but they also cultivate this sort of general manager type of mentality that provides a great runway and experience for you to take the career path that you've evolved in, going from being a CMO to a CRO. So love for you to share a little bit about that journey and maybe one of the things that intimidated you most about the sales side of the organization as you first stepped into that role. I know my first hire at Invoco, and I joined in 2016, was a sales leader, and I was petrified. And I was petrified when I was having to run sales in the interim part of it. So would love to hear maybe a little bit more for you to share with marketing executives who aspire to do some of that other work over time in sales, and like what you learned and where you had to adapt the most.
Yeah. So you're right, right? The starting point of, I was at General Mills for about a decade, and it's a pretty, the training that you get is absolutely how to build iconic brands, no question. But you are also the general manager, the P&L owner. And so the accountability for the top and bottom line and everything in between. And what comes with that is the orchestration and alignment across all of the functions of the organization. Operations, finance, sales. I do think, even regardless of that experience, but so working very closely with sales, setting pricing, distribution strategy, trade promotion strategy. Sales and marketing, though, in any organization is pretty symbiotic, right? So there's a high degree of awareness, history of working with each other, but it's how to remove those friction points that can exist. I think, you know, as I moved from chief marketing officer to chief revenue officer and taking on sales, it was probably more of just the expanded scope and breadth of responsibility, how to give myself the time, the capacity to get my arms around all of it. But it's not like we hadn't been working closely together already. I will also say I was very fortunate and lucky. I think we have an incredible sales organization. It wasn't broken. A lot of our sales leaders have actually been with the company for a decade or more. So it was an opportunity to get my arms around what was happening and just get deeper into the various aspects, right, of sales operations. We do our licensing, our training, and then it always comes down to prioritizing where to deep dive and spend your time where you can add most value, right? Where are the things that are going to unlock that next level of, have we thought about this? Or maybe we're struggling here. What's a barrier to clear? Or helping the organization to look ahead as new regulations come out, what's on the horizon, how are we going to have to adjust our go-to-market model and our sales organization to be able to get there? So I've been very, very fortunate. Maybe the other learning that I had along the way, again, I'm pretty big on setting a clear vision, direction, priorities for the organization, but also really understanding, and maybe just a reminder, because I do know this, but how much sales really love sort of the storytelling aspect and the inspiring story, right? Yeah. But how important, I mean, that is to really ensure that they know they're heard, they're being supported, and get them fired up, right, with the incentives so they are ready to run through the wall and go chase those goals. It's been fun. I'll say maybe the other last part is the importance of building a culture across those teams. And so we unify, we have a culture team that helps me. And we're all virtual. And they're super fun things. Like we've done wine tasting. We had a salesperson give everyone their favorite barbecuing tips. I mean, you can get pretty creative in a virtual environment. I think maybe you also benefit from, sales and marketers tend to be pretty energetic, upbeat, outgoing people. But bringing these together, we already had pretty high culture scores. We increased them another 6 points last year. So it's a fun team. We enjoy working together. And that's been another benefit of bringing the organizations together.
Yeah, there's definitely a great energy and vibe that comes when you get go-to-market folks in the room together. All right, last two snap questions for you. Number one, is there a book, a podcast, or an information resource that you feel like has helped you either deepen the disciplines of marketing or sales, or just around executive leadership and how you think about the company, that you would love to point other people to?
I love that. So I'll go back to maybe some tried and true good ones, but I am very big on strategy and differentiation. So a couple of my favorites are Blue Ocean Strategy, which is really the principles of thinking about, it comes back to, what are the unmet needs for consumers and how can you take what might be existing but solve something in a new way? I also am a big fan of Malcolm Gladwell books. My favorite one is maybe one of the lesser, no, but David and Goliath. And again, it's that same principle of outsmarting competition with differentiation, and how do you zig when they zag, right? Again, kind of same thing when we launched our Medicare Matchmaker campaign, very, very different and frame breaking for this industry to really solve that unmet need for consumers.
Oh, that's great. And then last one, which is a little bit off the wall. When annual enrollment, open enrollment end, you get to February or March, you can put everything down. I know you're like me, you've got kids and responsibilities at home, but assume all that goes away. What's a travel destination you'd love to go to that you haven't had the chance to get to yet?
Oh, that I haven't had a chance to get to? You know, I would probably say an African safari. I have never looked into it. I don't know what it would take to do, but it seems like an absolutely incredible, wild, probably slightly frightening, but amazing adventure.
My wife and I were fortunate enough to go to South Africa in 2002 or 2003, and I wholeheartedly put my vote of endorsement on that option. It was an amazing experience, and now we're just waiting for our kids to get to the right age where they can all appreciate that to go do it again. I wholeheartedly endorse that one. Well,
okay, well, I'm coming to you then for advice when we're ready to book that trip.
My advice might be a little bit out of date, but I'm happy to share what we learned. Well, I really enjoyed the conversation. It's definitely the interests and the things that you've done very much mirror what I'm interested in. I know so many other, you know, marketing, sales, commerce, and revenue leads would love to benefit from as well. So, Michelle, thank you so much for the time, and look forward to seeing you again soon in real life, if not on the podcast.
Sounds wonderful. Thanks, Greg. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Modern Revenue Executive. Links to any resources mentioned in this episode are in the show notes below. If you enjoyed this show, please give us a 5-star review and don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes.